Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show aliveandkicking@newstalk.com, or you will find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, Andrea Hayes on the chance encounter that led to her becoming a grief charity volunteer. Owen Tarrant returns with his take on the latest fitness trends, and Jerry Hussey on the importance of coming home to yourself. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I am autumning. I am moving at a much slower, more nourishing pace, and I have to say, I like it. Now, I had been getting an inkling that the gym classes I was going to just weren't suiting me anymore. Nothing to do with them. Love the trainers and the gang that go. But like I said, I just had this inkling that after many, many years there, it was time for a change. Now, I've let that simmer with me for ages, trying to figure out what it is that I truly want. Now, the dream, I'm going to put it out there, is to have a home gym set up. So maybe a Shomra type offering in the garden and enough equipment so that I do keep up strength training, which I love and is so important for our health. But there is less faff, I think, for me getting there and back because it's literally in the garden. I'm actually a surprising introvert when it comes to exercise. I was allergic to all team sports growing up, even though I would have to say in work and life situations, I would really view myself as a team player and I love people. And with the gym or anything, of course, it can be nice to have the social aspect and it does help you to stay consistent when you're going to be meeting a pal. Or I was brilliant when my sister used to pick me up twice a week and we'd go to spin together. But I really, really love to work out on my own. So until I get to that dream home gym stage, I want something a bit different. And I'm only going on about all of this because I want to emphasise the importance of teeny tiny steps that I took to get there. Obviously, for a while, as I say, I did nothing. I just thought about it. Then I started thinking about Reformer Pilates. I looked up the website of the one nearest to me and then I left it. That was enough of a step. The next step was downloading the app. Plenty for me at that point. And I just inched along closer and closer. And this week, I finally made it to a class. After being stuck in my comfort zone at the gym and telling myself that the Pilates place was way too far away from me, it has now happened and I loved it. I have just learned over time that those tiny little steps, and it sounds nuts, but I actually nearly congratulate myself every time I take one, keeping me motivated and moving. And you might join us. I'm part of a day retreat in Abbey Leaks in Laois on Saturday, November 2nd. It's a Samhain retreat, the time of year that was traditionally the harvest and a celebration of all the hard efforts of the year. So Elaine from Shulin is going to be leading a nice mindful walk. Her fab sister Niamh will give a relaxing yoga flow at Black Hill Woods. We will have lunch and then I'm going to do a Nourish Yourself workshop. We'll end by the fire and it will just be a gorgeous day. Now, tickets are limited. Lots have sold already. But look, if you've bought one, looking forward to seeing you there. But if you would like to come and you are listening, there are 3 spots left. So if you think it's a bit of you, check out my Instagram at Claire McKenna Presents or Elaine at Shul_Lynn for more details. You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, Owen Tarrant of Matchbox Fitness was with us a couple of months ago to talk about the importance of exercising as we age. This time he's back and we're going to be looking at the latest in fitness trends. Well, you're very welcome back, Owen.
Thanks very much, Claire. Thanks for having me again. It's great to be back.
And trends really fire off now, don't they? Because, of course, we have social media, so we're getting influenced all around.
Yeah, and that's a hot topic at the moment. So recent stats show that 60% of Gen Zs are actually getting their fitness and their wellness information from social media, specifically TikTok. So we're not leaving our information to the experts anymore. It's spread far more broadly across the spectrum from the social media to the experts. And there's a bit of a disconnect in terms of what you should be doing versus what you actually are doing as a result.
Because say a trend would, like aerobics, for example, would kick off in America, you might get a Jane Fonda video arrive and it would take a long time before it would come into the everyday. Now there's so much more speed. And as you say, there's a real danger in us just accepting that this is what somebody eats in a day and taking nutritional advice from somebody when we don't really know the reality of what's behind that 30-second video.
We don't. And what's important to note is that that video and that image is personal to that person. And like what we're seeing at the moment is the trends in the fitness industry are going really heavily towards the personalization. So for any person who's coming into a fitness facility or an active life center, the focus is now moving from a generic one size fits all to what specifically should you be doing. So that will rely on testing, that will rely on markers from physical activity, from physical wellness point of view, and being able to action those as an industry. What's really important is that the industry then has a voice and has the experts in the right place with the right accreditations giving the right information.
So what are some of the things that you're seeing online? I mean, you can't move without protein being thrown in your face at the moment.
Yeah, there's a huge amount online. There's a huge amount being pushed towards the digitalization. So using your smartwatches, using your phones as a connect to the wellness and the fitness industry. And not everything online is bad. You know, there's a real balanced view of what is good, what is bad. But my main takeaway and my main objective in speaking on the trends is that it needs to be personal to that person. It can't be a one size fits all. It has to be you going to the professional, you getting that information, and most importantly, acting on it.
And tell us a little bit about how fitness is handled differently across Europe and next door in the UK.
So in Europe, what we see is we've seen different countries have different approaches. So in Romania, for example, they have tax credits available to them. So they can claim back tax for physical activity. So if you pay €500 to the gym, you can claim that back as an expense, a medical expense, which is really an innovative and novel kind of concept. And recently in the budget, it was touched on in the Irish budget, it was touched on that they were going to look into this in 2025. But we really hope that they do, because there's a proven model across other countries. Romania are doing it with success. Canada and New Zealand are also doing it with success, where they increase their membership levels in their fitness facilities, but they also increase their attendance levels, which is, you know, very important as well.
And I wonder how much of a barrier money is over motivation, but I suppose it does send out a message, doesn't it? And I often think that the messaging that comes particularly from top down can be quite finger wagging and, you know, eat less, move more. We're sort of saying, listen, if you're a gym goer, you're protecting your later self, you're looking after your future self, so we're going to reward you with that, with more money in your pocket. And, you know, that's the kind of messaging we want.
Exactly. And what's a really good analogy to take on that is we want people to invest in their fitness pension. So we all have fiscal pensions. We all, you know, at the end of our working days, we can take out that pension and enjoy it. But we can't really enjoy it unless you have that bank of fitness already built up, that you're able to use it. You're able to go for those walks, those hikes, holidays without it being laborious or a chore. So that's very important to note. What's also important to note is, you know, the government need to step in. You know, 8 out of 10 adults will be classified as overweight come 2030. So what we're trying to do, and what we would love to see, is that our lifespan versus our health span needs to increase. So we need to live longer, better. At the moment, we're living longer, but we're not specifically living better, you know. So that's what we're looking to influence.
And how are they handling these rising figures of obesity in the UK?
So recently, so the UK budget is due to commence shortly as well. And recently there was discussions on initiating research with people with high levels of obesity. So they would, you know, be prescribed a medical drug similar to the Ozempic drug. So that would relieve levels of obesity and, you know, increase their ability to work, essentially. In Ireland, we are heading that way also, that we have to have medical intervention. But what I believe is that, you know, we can tackle this from the root cause, and the root cause is inactivity. It's you know, poor diet, and we can attack that and tackle that with the correct procedures in place.
I do think that's the case with some people, but I'd have to challenge you on all people, because there are plenty of people who are active, who eat well, who still would be considered to be obese. And now we're starting to look at obesity as a disease, as an illness, rather than something that somebody isn't doing.
Yeah, so 25% of the population is considered inactive. So it's that cohort that they're trying to tackle in the UK. And in Ireland, it's you're right, it is a disease, but there are supplements and there are additions that we can put in place, like as I said earlier, the recognize it as a prescription, as a medicine, exercise that we prescribe that. So coming back to the root, prescribing that as well as something else could be an addition. When we look at the Ozempics, one third of the weight lost in Ozempic can be lean muscle mass. So although it's a great tool and a great supplement or drug to prescribe, you know, the asterisk beside it is you also still need to train. Like, you still need to resistance train, you still need to get your cardio done. So it's not just a quick fix. And that's what we're seeing a lot across the world, and the global wellness economy research shows that we are looking for quick fixes. We are spending more on personal care and beauty than we are on physical activity. So for me, we need those roles reversed, and we need to be looking at longer term habits rather than the short quick fix.
And of course, it's nuanced and it's multi-layered. I think we need to look at the way in which we work and the length of time people are spending doing that. And it makes it very hard juggling that and other aspects of their personal life, and feeling that they can fit movement in there. That can be a real challenge. Access to mental health supports is something that really needs to be looked at, because often that can be involved in the way people feel about themselves and the way that they eat or move their body. And we make that almost impossible. The wait lists are massive. The cost is huge. So yes, it is multifaceted. But sending out that messaging that we mentioned earlier in Romania, that, you know, this is a positive thing to do for yourself and we're going to support you in it, is definitely a better messaging than just simply wagging the finger and saying, eat less, move more. So you really want to get the message out there of getting a baseline measure of where you're at. And how does somebody do that?
So although the fitness and the wellness industry is increasing, what we're seeing a real major increase in Europe is the boutique market. And a lot of the smaller facilities, and I'm going to move away from the word gym, active life centres, I'm going to term it as. So a lot of them are installing strength testing, VO2 max testing. They're linking in, they're integrating their smartphones, their smartwatches into getting a 360 profile of what that person is physically able to do. Typically, you know, gyms historically have gotten you in and you've trained at your own pace and you may have made your own gains and you track that yourself. A lot of the boutique style gyms now are doing that as part of their package. They will track your progress. They will make sure that you're getting better, and they will interpret the data and analyze the data to make sure that you're improving on a 360 kind of view of your overall physical activity.
When it comes to resistance training, do we need to be lifting weights, or can body weight be enough? Like, you know, I was just talking in my introduction about Reformer Pilates, for example. Is that considered the same? Are you building muscle using those kind of forms, or does there need to be a weight or a barbell?
There needs to be progressive overload. So Pilates and Reformer Pilates is really good. All forms of exercise are really good. But when we speak about resistance training, we need to be at a minimum resistance training twice a week. And that's the minimum guideline. But we're looking for progressive overload. So if we stay if we're lifting 10 kg for 6 months, eventually we'll plateau and we won't be stressing the body enough to create the adaptations we need to grow. So what we're looking to do is, the boutique gyms are looking to increase that incrementally and progressively over time, so that you are getting stronger, that you're not just plateauing and you're able to do more longer and more often.
Well, look, maybe the next time you come back, we might get into weight training in detail and what's happening with the muscle. I mean, I'm the kind of person that really likes to know under the bonnet what's happening, and it helps me to do it that little bit more. But for now, thank you very much for coming on. If people want to find out more about Owen Tarrant's work, you can go to matchboxlife.ie.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, the next topic we're going to be discussing is likely one that the majority of listeners will have at least some experience with. It's at its core a unique and deeply personal journey that affects us in very different ways. Grief. The grieving process can manifest in many ways. It can be long bouts of sadness or hit us suddenly and then disappear as quickly as it came. But whatever way you experience grief, it can be made easier by talking to someone. And that is exactly what my next guest does through a volunteer group called Bethany. Andrea Hayes, author, presenter and Bethany Grief Minister, joins me now. Andrea, you're very welcome.
Oh, thank you for inviting me in.
And we've been friends for a long time, TV3 days, and this was not something I knew was on your CV until recently enough.
Well, it's a volunteer thing that I do privately, and I suppose I've done it for, gosh, it's over 10 years. I mean, who's counting the years when you get to a certain age? But it happened when my own dad died, so it was because of personal experience, and I was, I suppose, carried by somebody when I'd moved from the north side. I'm a north side girl like yourself, and I was catapulted to the south side, and my dad passed away, and I was just finding it very difficult. I am very spiritual, as you know. I was getting involved in the local church down in St. Anne's in Shankill, and there was a gentleman I used to see. He'd see me lighting candles, and he's just started chatting to me, and then he said, "Do you want to get a coffee in the resource centre?" And I said, "That'd be lovely." And over time, he was just talking to me about my dad and the grief, and he just sat with me, and he seemed to listen in a very different way. It was a very safe, caring space. And maybe because he was a bit older, he really helped me during those 2 years. And then he said to me afterwards, you know, "I work for Bethany. It's a free volunteer service in the area. Would you like to train?" And I said, "Oh, gosh, I wouldn't know anything about that. I am not trained." And he said, "No, it's volunteers. We just train the people to listen with kindness. And you would just do what I do. You'd have a cup of coffee with somebody and you're just there and you're present." So I thought about it for a little while. I was very busy. I was doing animal A&D at the time, like this nearly 15 years ago. I probably was busier than ever. But you always ask a busy person. I always find the busiest people give back more. Generally, you know, I'm probably doing a lot less now and I could be doing a lot more. But I did train with them, and then I just started to do it volunteer in Shankill, and I've been doing it ever since. And it's something I really enjoy, and I'm very passionate and privileged to do it. It is a privilege to hear people's stories and to witness people's stories. It really is a safe space. And when people trust you that much, you kind of go back and think, wow, you know, that was a very special moment that we shared.
And I do often think, they say we do death very well in this country, and we do in Ireland. We really come together when somebody passes away, and you know, we arrive for the wake, we celebrate their life. Funerals are huge here in the way that they're not in perhaps other parts of the world. But then life moves on and everybody's busy and the lasagnas stop coming to the front door and people don't want to bring up your dad because they feel they don't want to upset you. And I think that's probably the most important time, because the reality is set in. You're not going to see that loved one anymore. So it's very important that you seek somebody out to talk to about it.
Yeah, I think why Bethany works very well is that it's not counselling, and it's a free, non-directive listening service. So it's level two listening. So the people are trained to hold a space for grief and listen in a non-directive way. We wouldn't deal with disenfranchised grief or complicated grief, which is grief that would maybe need a bit more support in the counselling space or the psychotherapy space. But everybody finds that grief is difficult because you don't want to be bringing it up, but you need to talk, and it's a safe space where people will listen. But some of the things that would upset people would surprise. Everybody's story of grief is so individual. It's so private to you. Something I might say to you might hurt you, but would be really supportive to somebody else. So you're kind of in your own little space, and it's your own journey. And even in one family, what we find is maybe, you know, one sister or brother is dealing with it one way, the parent is dealing with it another way, and they have different styles. But I suppose with the listening, it is active listening. So it's not a passive active listening. You're actively listening to somebody, and what you're not doing is you're not giving advice. So you're not saying do this or doing that. You're not trying to fact find. You're not getting all the juicy bits. You know, you're just listening to the story that the person is telling. So it's led by them. It might bring them back into their childhood. It might bring up other griefs. Very often when people have a significant grief, it could even be, you know, the grief of your dog or a job loss or marriage breakdown. All of these losses tend to bring up old griefs and old losses. So suddenly you're sitting with a lot of baggage on your shoulder. Perhaps you didn't attend to the grief, maybe 10 years ago, because you're a busy mom, you were, you know, doing different things and life gets in the way. So sometimes it can just hit you like a tsunami and you can get very stuck. And in those moments, it's great to be able to reach out and meet somebody for a cup of coffee and talk, where you know this is your time. As I always say, nobody needs anything from you. Nobody wants anything from you. This is your time. And often sometimes we sit in silence and you hold a space for somebody for 5 or 10 minutes. How often do we seek out silence in these busy lives that we have? You know, you don't get 5 minutes to just sit with your thoughts and be present to them.
Yeah, and I think people underestimate those griefs. When we think of grief, and obviously I just mentioned death there, that's the first place we go. But we have to accept that grief comes in all different forms. If we thought life was going to go one way and it doesn't, we have to make space to grieve for that. And I think that sitting in silence is really important. I often say after my dad died, just luckily enough, I had signed up to a mindfulness and meditation course. So once a week over Zoom, we would sit and be led through all these different things, which made me really sit still. And often all of those feelings would come up and I'd have to sit with them, because a lot of the time we just sort of push them down and say, oh no, I'm fine. Come on, it's grand. And sure, look, you know, hadn't they a great life? Or, you know, that wasn't meant to be, or what's for you won't pass you. And we move on. But you do need to allow it to come out and to feel it.
No, definitely. And we do a free 5-week course. I call it the 5-week course. It's like a continued space. And the first thing we do every evening when we do it is we do a relaxation. And exactly what you've just said there, a little bit of mindfulness at the beginning, because when we are in the fight and flight mode in our brain, so when we're in that, you know, fight and flight, and very often grief will bring you to that space, you can't heal. Your body can't heal. So even when somebody's grieving, you know, you might feel very fatigued. You might have brain fog. You lose your energy because the body is overloaded with all of these emotions and it can be very heightened and a lot of overwhelm in that space. But if you learn how to relax, even during a little bit of mindfulness, we've all done it, even in the car, you say to your child, you know, deep breaths now, take a moment, take 3 deep breaths. But don't underestimate that, because that is really so important to just allow your body, your central nervous system to relax and to self-soothe. And those little tips, that's why mindfulness is fantastic. And you're kind of bringing those things into people's lives and suggesting them. Now, that would be an invitation to somebody. They don't have to do it, but it's always an invitation to somebody if they're doing the 5-week course, that they might journey with you for those 5 weeks and over that period in a group. That's a group setting, by the way, so it's not one-to-one. Often it's the peers in the room. When you hear other people have a very similar life story to you and you witness their story and they witness yours, it's in there that the healing happens. As I always say, you know, the Bethany facilitator is just there to hold the space. The healing happens and it's something else that's going on there, you know.
And I'm sure it's nice to have somebody who is outside of your personal life. I mean, I have a friend going through a tough time at the moment. I check in with her, you know, once a week. We talk. And I find if she really breaks down, she'll often apologise for that the next day, you know, and say, I'm really sorry. I was just venting. I'm better today. And look, that's fine. That's all part of the journey as well. And I would obviously say there's no need to apologise. But when you're meeting somebody who's not in your immediate circle, you don't have to put on a brave face.
Well, that's what you're trying to say. Just show up as you are and be very deeply honest with your feelings and talk as much or as little as you want. Cry as much or as little as you want. And oftentimes, I mean, there's the model of grief, the Kubler-Ross model of grief is what people used to go to and the different stages there. I think it is, they kind of go denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance, but it isn't linear. So people don't go from one to the other, graduate from one and now I'm on to the other. And they've changed now a lot of the kind of models of grief, and it's more of an oscillating process. Like you said, one day you can deal with it and then you are kind of restoring yourself that day, and then you go into the loss orientation. So you're oscillating, moving between these two spaces. So as you said, one day she's crying, she's really upset with you. The next day she's picking the kids up from school, she's doing the shop, she's getting her dinner on, and everybody goes, God, she's great, isn't she? She's really over it. And the next day it just is going down. And that's because the body just couldn't hold grief all the time. We wouldn't be able to deal with it. So our brains, like when you're in the fight or flight mode, they know you're highly stressed, and then they'll bring you into the relaxation mode and you kind of go in between. So grief can be ever present and it can go on for decades. You know, it's constantly with you. It's something I always say, it grows with you. You never get over it. It just becomes part of your heart. It just stays in the heart and, you know, life grows around it.
And what about people then who'll say, well, you know, that's what we do then. You just sort of get on with it and eventually you learn to carry it a bit better. How do you know that you're someone who should seek sitting with somebody, be it a Bethany volunteer or maybe something a bit deeper?
I think you know yourself. I think we always know, trust the heart, trust the gut, but also trust the people that you go to see. I mean, in our group in Shankill, we have about five different people and they're different ages and different styles. You know, you might prefer talking to one person, go, God, they really seem to have a nurturing, you know, space for me. So if it's somebody's not right for you, seek out somebody else. But oftentimes, you might need counselling, and that's a great area to go down, and I would encourage that. But it might be just a listening ear. Now, sometimes a doctor can be a great listening ear. Oftentimes, your doctor will hold that space for you. And very often, we can all be Bethany listeners. You know, this gift of listening through the ear of the heart is something we can all do on the bus today. You could be standing in the shops, and a lady will stop you, and you'll just have a chat with them. And very like the person, Martin, who saw me lighting a candle, he probably thought there's something she's praying for every day. And he just asked me, are you okay? Or do you want to talk? And if you listen actively, listening actively is not getting ready to, you know, put your answer in. Really listen, hold that space for people and be present to them and really notice how you're feeling. And just that, if we all kind of said today, let's just go out and listen through the ear of the heart, the whole world would have, I think, a much happier experience for everybody. It's that kindness piece everybody talks about. Just think of other people, have a little bit of empathy. And if you have time, just listen.
And obviously we always, with the best of intention, feel we want to give advice or say that happened to my mother's cousin's brother's friend. Just hold the space. That's all you really need to do and say, well, thank you for telling me that. And it just makes people feel important. And you're right, the world would be a lovely place if we all made more time for that. What has doing this taught you about life?
You know, since I started, I lost my dad. And as everybody would probably know, I had major health issues over the years. And I got diagnosed with a very difficult chronic illness. And even being around people that could hold that space for me, I had multiple pregnancy losses. I had cancer diagnosis. So I've really experienced, everybody experienced loss in life, but had all of those losses and been held in a space with other people. So my association with Bethany has helped me more than I'm sure I've ever helped anybody else, because it's been a real privilege to be there and to listen. I've been on the board and I've left the board, and I, you know, so I'm very heavily involved with the charity. I really believe in it. It's a national charity. It's all over Ireland. We've just done training in Wexford and in Donegal. COVID was very difficult for the charity because we couldn't see people face to face. We couldn't meet in a group. And then a lot of people, it's a lot of older people in our charity. It's an older cohort. Many of them aren't getting back into the community as much as they used to. And we're actually finding since COVID, we're busier than ever because people couldn't grieve, as you said, in the normal way. We are good at grieving in Ireland, but during COVID, people just didn't have that opportunity to grieve. And there's a lot of maybe complicated grief or just kind of grief that's coming out now that they didn't have a space to hold it then. But no, it's been a lovely, you know, journey for me. And if anybody is listening in and thinks maybe I'd like to volunteer, we're always looking for volunteers in your area and you just have to find out. It's very private. As I said, it's free. It's non-directive. I always say, don't try to fix or don't try to find out the details because, you know, you're trying to fix them with your advisor going, tell me, you're not related to such and such who's related to, because that's how we speak. So it's listening on a different level. And I think people really appreciate it.
And we don't talk about it enough, but people always want to know in their health and well-being, what's the supplement that I take? What's the magic pill? And a huge part of our well-being is the power of giving back. And I always think it makes it sound almost transactional. Go out and give because it'll make you feel better. But that's okay. It opens you up. It widens your perspective and it does give you that feel good. I mean, I'm sure you're recommending it when you're talking about it. I can see you glow.
I think it's about being present. I think the training that we do really kind of teaches how to be an active listener, but also listening to others, but listening to yourself. When you're fully present in your own self, you can be there for yourself, but others, and even to just flex that muscle. Some people go to the gym, some people walk every day. But if you're flexing the muscle of being present to yourself, your own feelings, and to others' feelings, I think it makes you more human. And it really makes you very sensitive to what's going on in your life and noticing how you're reacting to things. So I think that's a great gift to give yourself if you can be present to yourself and to others. Anybody that's gone through Bethany and has, you know, received the service, very often they want to give back. So a lot of the people we have in Bethany are people who experienced it themselves, because it is one of those surprising things. Not often do you get a free gift. It is a free gift of presence. It's a free gift of a compassionate heart who's holding a safe space for you to show up just as you are. We don't judge people. We don't question them. We don't ever, ask where you're from, where you went to school, what you do for a living. None of that matters. Nobody knows my background there. I'm just Andrea from Shankill who does the Bethany. Do you know what I mean? So they don't know. I don't know what they do. They're just somebody who comes. We don't write any details or notes or, you know, it's completely confidential and non-directive.
Where can people find out more?
Well, if they go onto the website, Orla is our administrator, who's amazing. And if they go onto bethany.ie, and there's a number there, there's an email there. And if they can't, they can reach out to me, Andrea Hayes. I'm on social media. They'll find me easily enough. But definitely get onto Bethany. If they need help and if they want that listening service, or indeed if they want to find out more. But if they are struggling, there's lots of national helplines, as you know, out there. And the Irish Hospice Foundation are fantastic as well. And there's many other helplines. So don't suffer in silence. Reach out. Help is available.
Andrea Hayes, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Now, Gerry Hussey needs little introduction. Having worked with elite athletes, Olympians and corporates as a performance psychologist, he began to move to the masses through his work at the Soul Space community with his wife Miriam, and he's written two bestsellers, Awaken the Power Within and The Freedom Within. He and Miriam have their annual show at the National Concert Hall in Dublin coming up on November 10th. It's called Coming Home, and Gerry joins me on the line now. Well, Gerry, you're very welcome as always.
No, thanks you for having me. Great to speak with you as always.
And you're just back from your Soul Space retreat in Portugal. How was that?
Yeah, it really great. And I think as the retreat grows and we tweak it and make it better and people have awareness of what the retreat is, it's just amazing the mix now in ages, the mix in male and female. And people are coming ready to do the work. So our retreats incorporate things like yoga, meditation, we do exercise. But the root of it is the big workshops we do. And the workshops are all around releasing trauma. They're all around changing subconscious programs. So we try to do in 4 or 5 days, maybe what it might take somebody normally a year to do. So they're intense, but they're incredible, and we put into practice all the stuff that we talk about, from regulating the vagus nerve to, you know, sleeping better, the good brain axis, and then, as I said, the deeper stuff about releasing trauma, changing subconscious programs. So it's just a gift to be with a group of people who are really up for the work. There's no ego, there's no nonsense. People are there to do the work in the most human but also the most loving way. And it's also fun. You see people connect, just form deep connections. So it's you know, it's a full-on few days, but you just come back re-inspired from the whole thing and re-inspired with a new belief in the power of humanity and the power of the human spirit.
And how do you suggest that people take what they learn on retreat, be it a day retreat or something more intense like yours over a few days, and really make sure that it begins to knit into their everyday?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, we all are very aware of what's going on in the world at the moment. We know what's going on. The weather is changing. We have more darkness. We have more rain. So if you look to the outside world at the moment, it seems to be, you know, constant change. There's a lot to be worried about. So the first advice I have for everybody is before you attend to the kids, before you attend to the job, before you lead your team, before you change the world, focus on yourself first. This sounds a little bit selfish, but it's not really. And I'm not saying you need to focus on yourself for the entire day. So we break it down to 15 to 20 minutes. So 15 minutes is 1% of your day. So if you can take 1% of your day for yourself, and in that 15 minutes, focus on, well, what can I control? And we often think of, when I say to someone, what can you control? People think I can, and they name things outside of themselves. But ultimately, whether we know it or not, we all get to control our stories, the things we think about, the things we speak about, and we actually get to control our emotions. So what we teach them is this 15 to 20 minute routine whereby every morning we focus on W-I-N to win the day. So win means what's important now. And we know that the world can be challenging. But we know that the world can be, you know, difficult. And I'm not saying to anybody, if you meditate every morning, if you exercise every morning, if you regulate your vagal tone every morning, suddenly all your problems go away. They certainly don't. But what happens is, by regulating your vagal tone, by stimulating the gut brain axis, by moving energy, by creating endorphins, by, you know, firing new neurons in the brain every single morning, now you're facing your challenge, whatever that is, from a place of calm, a place of joy, from a wider perspective. And ultimately, you're asking the greatest question that any of us could ask ourselves: who am I? What do I stand for? What is the greatest impact I can have in this moment? And ultimately, you're asking, how am I choosing to respond? Because none of us gets to control what happens to us outside the world. We don't always get to happen to control what happens in our life, but we always get to control our response. So that's what we train people, 15 to 20 minutes every single morning, to ultimately begin with yourself, regulate your thoughts, regulate your emotions, stimulate the gut brain axis, balance the nervous system, tone the vagal tone. And we know from science and evidence, when we take time to do those things from a physical, from a mental, from an emotional point of view, it activates a superpower.
And people are feeling very overwhelmed at the moment, aren't they? I mean, aside from what can be going on for you personally, life stress, work stress, the modern day life in this always on culture, taking in all of this information, and it does feel like we're all carrying the weight of the world on our shoulders. There are wars breaking out, genocide, crisis after crisis, from cost of living to housing crisis here. It can feel like a lot. And how do you suggest people manage that by staying informed and standing up for what injustice they see, and also minding themselves through it all?
Absolutely. And, you know, it starts with minding yourself. So, you know, the only response, the only thing that cures anger is love. Hatred is cured by kindness. Fear is cured by love. It sounds so simple, Claire, but if we allow our inner emotions to become equal to the outer emotions, if we internally are coming from a place of fear, judgment, comparison, anger, then we're actually just adding to the problem. So, you know, people say fight fire with fire. But did you ever see a fireman or a firewoman arriving at a fire and blasting out more fire? That's madness. So the first thing we have to do is regulate a sense of calm, a sense of justice, a sense of passion, a sense of love inward. And then we start to bring that out. So we ask ourselves, you know, in some little way, how can I be a beacon of hope that I want to be? How can I be a beacon of the world that I want to admire, or that I want to live in? And it comes down to, like, personal choices about everything, from the clothes you wear. Become aware of where those clothes have come from. And do the producers of those clothes support a safe, equal world? The food you eat, where is it produced? What's in it? So awareness is the big thing. And it's to look at the bigger picture and ask, how in my daily activities, where possible, because it's not always possible. Sometimes we have to buy certain clothes. Sometimes we have to eat certain food. But where possible is it that I make lifestyle choices that lead to a fairer, better, happier me and a fairer, happier world?
I mentioned in the introduction that yourself and Miriam have your annual Soul Space event coming up at the National Concert Hall on November 10th. it's always a gorgeous event. I'm always moved from the minute I sit down to the minute I go home, inspired, having laughed and cried along the way. This one is called Coming Home. Why did you call it that, and what does it mean for us to come home to ourselves?
I think it's so important. It's exactly what we've been speaking so much. You know, if anyone listening to this, you think when you wake up in the morning, you think of maybe work, you think of your boss, you think of the team you have to lead, then you think of the children, you have to get up, you get the children up, you get the children out, then you get to the traffic, you listen to the news, you're on social media. So much of our everyday awareness and attention is being pulled to other people, to other parts of the world. And what happens is we begin to neglect ourselves. We begin to become overwhelmed by everything that's going on without us. So what we've spoken about so far is this idea of coming home to myself. In the middle of all of this that's going on out there, who am I choosing to be? What are the words I'm choosing? What are the conversations, you know, that I'm choosing to have? What's the food I'm choosing to eat? What's the exercise or meditation or yoga I'm choosing to do or not to do? Because every single one of those choices is either upregulating your immune system, upregulating your energy, upregulating your positivity, or downregulating. So we all know the world needs, you know, people who are vibrant, happy, healthy, people who can stand up for things, people who can, you know, come at things in the right way. So coming home is about coming home to yourself. It is for that one day. You don't have to be the mom, you don't have to be the dad, you don't have to be the brother. For that one day, we give you the chance to stop and to breathe. And also then to release. You said there that you laugh and cry. Over the last 4 years between COVID and war, it's nonstop trauma, and it's small traumas, and particularly younger people and adolescents. We have been exposed to nonstop trauma. You go back to COVID, we had debt notices pumped in and debt numbers pumped into our house every day. It's still continuing. And whether we know it or not, our nervous systems have been overwhelmed, and that is what trauma is. And we're beginning to lose faith in ourselves. We're beginning to lose faith in the world. So this is a day to do exactly that. It is a day to stop and to breathe. It is a day to let the mask down. It is a day to step out of the roles you play every day and ask, who am I? What's my soul, my heart asking me for now? What do I need to take on? But maybe more importantly, Claire, what do I need to let go of? I think a lot of us are holding fear and trauma over the last 4 or 5 years. And in this day, we're going to give you very powerful tools and techniques to release that, to let it go, to scream, to chant, to cry, to release it. And we'll take you through those practices. And my hope, and from what I'm certain, is when people leave, you will feel lighter, for you will let go a lot of the weight, the emotional weight you're carrying. You'll also leave inspired with some amazing talks, with some amazing guest speakers who will deal with everything from trauma and addiction and overcoming that. We also have incredible meditation, and we have some singers that we're about to announce. And if anybody has been watching somebody on the from Ireland do something incredible on the global stage, we have secured her after months and months and months. So there's music, there's meditation, there's talks, there's chanting, there's... It's just a day to re-energize your soul. It is a day to activate, you know, your new power and move from this place of being disempowered to a place of empowerment.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. Tickets are on sale now. You can go to the National Concert Hall, nch.ie, Coming Home from Soul Space. And Gerry, what about you then with life at the moment, family life, work with Soul Space? How are you?
Yeah, it's a lovely question. And, you know, we've had our own family challenges, you know, with a brother of mine who's you know, gives a bit of a scare during the week with health. So my life is just like everybody else's, you know. I'm not immune to the challenges of life. Sometimes I get scared myself. Sometimes, you know, I can slightly overdo it. Sometimes, you know, so I deal with the same emotions. I deal with the same financial stresses of everybody else. And I know times when I start to get overwhelmed. So the last 2 weeks have been, you know, I couldn't have planned what was going to happen over the last 2 weeks. But in times like this, this is where I double down on my own advice. Like even this morning, I was up, I did some lovely exercise, I did some meditation, went down to the sea for a swim. And I know it works because I know when I woke up this morning, I was scared, I was worried, my mind was running ahead of me. And then after I go through my process, literally 30 minutes later, I felt more calm. I realized that half the stories I was telling myself when I woke up were fictional, probably never going to happen. And so, like, you know, that's what I want people to know, that I, you know, I'm going through the same thing that everybody that has a young family, that has, you know, health issues in their family, who, you know, and yet I know that if I can give myself 15 to 20 minutes every single morning to ask myself to regulate, you know, we know now the science behind the vagal tone, we know the connection between exercise and mental health. If you're not regularly releasing, and exercise is a great way of releasing. So that's how I know, because I get scared, I get overwhelmed at times. Sometimes my sleep, you know, with young kids isn't great. So I'm living the same life as everybody else. I wake up some mornings, I'm scared, I'm stuck, I'm worried, I'm stuck in the past, or I'm gone to the future. And with these practices that I've learned over the years, literally within 20 minutes, thankfully, I can be back to a place of certainty, of calmness, of focus. Does that mean all the problems in my life has gone clear? Absolutely not. They're still there waiting for me. But it means that I am coming at them in a totally different way. And so life is incredible. It has its challenges, as it does for everybody else. And for me, it's to always keep an eye on myself, because, you know, I'm on the road, I'm moving a lot. There's often a lot of people, you know, looking for things from me. So it's really important that I keep my own cup nourished. It's really important that I keep myself grounded and safe, because anybody that knows my history, I'm not naturally calm. I'm not naturally confident. In fact, I'm the opposite. And if I was to stop, you know, giving myself those 20 minutes every morning, if I was to stop my daily activities that I know work, literally within a week, 10 days, I begin to revert. I can feel my anxiety coming up. I can feel my you know, just the overwhelm, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. These, as simple as these practices, yoga, meditation, exercise, cold water, as simple as they sound, it is amazing how powerful they are.
And look, hopefully you and Miriam get as much of a release and joy from the stage at the National Concert Hall as the rest of us will in the audience. Coming Home is at the National Concert Hall in Dublin on November 10th. Tickets are available at nch.ie. Gerry Hussey, thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
So that is it for Alive and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aidan McKelvey, and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.